Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
I'm ready to rock and roll when you are.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker McBride here, joined as always by my co-host, Matt Wasko. We are joining you after a week off, but we are back. And what episode is this, Matt?
Episode 38.
38. It's an exciting one. I know we've got a real exciting one coming next week with a couple of special guests. So,
and the amount of time it's taken to lock those two in has been a long time. So we're finally excited they're going to be on.
That's right. We're very excited for that one, but we got a good one for you today as well. First, we are going to give a little update on our Kansas City Chiefs, who got the win last week.
Yeah.
They kind of gutted out a win. And this week, they are facing, I believe it's, is it the Raiders this week?
I don't know.
I think it is the Raiders. Okay. You want to look that
up
real quick?
Yeah, let's look that up.
Because they're still undefeated. And they're now the only undefeated team left in the NFL, even with all the injuries they've had. And they just traded for a new wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins.
You're right. They're playing the Raiders tomorrow at 3:25.
Okay. That ought to be a fun one. Boy, the Raiders are not very good.
Which just means they'll probably lose to them.
Well, they're either going to blow them out or they're going to lose. Yeah. I don't know. But I can't bet against them. I'm going to have to take the Chiefs 30-13.
You're 3-0?
I know I've picked them to win every time, and they've won every time. Yeah. I don't know how many that is.
I think we've picked 3 out of the 6, so, and I'm 1-2. So I need to get to 50%, so I'm choosing the Chiefs to win. What'd you pick?
30-13.
I'm going to say 24-14.
Okay. Interesting. So, we are going to dive into our Fit Focus. And what we're going to do here, we're coming up on Halloween. Today is what, the 27th?
26.
So, Halloween's coming up in 5 days. And the one common thing in Halloween, well, I should say two common things. Number one is dressing up in costumes. That's not what we're going to be covering today. The second thing is candy, Halloween candy. Everyone knows
Halloween
and loves
candy.
Halloween candy. And so we are going to dive a little deeper into these candies and talk about what kind of nutrition we have in them and if they're a good option for your diet or not.
Yeah, well, if you were a listener of this show, and hopefully you all are, or if you're new to this program, you'll learn quickly. But if you're new to this program and you were to ask that question that Parker just asked, do we think Halloween candy, which is pretty much a lot of the candy you see in grocery stores already, sometimes they just make it look, you know, with ghosts and goblins and, you know, pumpkin-shaped candy. If we thought it was good for your diet, you'd know the answer. So
yeah, but it's still worth diving a little deeper into just to get some of the shocking realities of what we're facing
right
here. So I think it's going to be very interesting. Matt, I'm going to ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
What is your favorite Halloween candy? And let's look at that one first.
So something I typically don't eat, but if I could eat it without worry, I would enjoy. Probably this is going to be funny because I really like the sour Skittles.
The sour Skittles. Okay.
And they have just Skittles on here, and we'll get to those numbers. But every once in a while I've had those in the past, and I think the last time I had those was like 10 years ago, but I man, those are, whatever they put in those are addictive.
Well, I've got a ingredients list pulled up here for Skittles.
Okay.
You ever read the ingredients label on Skittles before?
I have. It's been a while.
You kind of already know.
Yeah.
First ingredient, sugar.
Yeah.
That's not surprising.
No.
Second ingredient, corn syrup, which is another form of sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
Third ingredient, hydrogenated palm kernel oil.
Seed oil.
Yep.
Yeah.
Citric acid, tapioca dextrin.
Dextrin. Okay.
Yeah. Modified cornstarch.
Okay.
Natural and artificial flavors. Sodium citrate and carnauba wax.
Carnauba wax.
Must be the bonding agent for the Skittles. So basically, it kind of sounds like it's a bunch of different types of sugar that's all bonded together with wax.
Well, and I looking at the list here, what's the serving size on that? Does it say?
On Skittles, I mean, that's just the ingredient list.
Okay. We'll just assume what the serving size
probably
is.
Probably one package.
Yeah. Well, like one of those little packages you buy in the store.
Yeah.
Which are usually like $1, $1.25 or something like that. So here is the carbohydrates that are in that, 56.
Ooh, 56 grams?
So that's the carbs alone. That would put you over probably 220, 230.
Calories? Mm-hmm. Be around 230 calories.
Then out of that 56 grams of carbs, 47 grams of sugar.
Mm. Almost all sugars.
Yes. Guess the nutritional value of the fats and proteins.
Zero.
You are correct.
Well, we read the ingredient list. What in there is protein? None of that.
On this list, it does say 0.1.
0.1. So, how many Skittles would you have to eat to get your daily protein goal?
Well, if one pack is 0.1, you'd have to eat like a case to get
like 400 packs something crazy like that.
I mean, that's just crazy that you think about, well, if I eat six eggs is 36 grams of protein,
mm-hmm.
right? So you wanted to match that protein. For to get 1 gram of protein in Skittles, you'd have to eat 10 packs, 1 gram. Okay, so that's 100 packs to get 10 grams of protein, 200, 300, 360 packs to get 36 grams of protein.
Wow.
Am I doing my math right
there?
I think
that's right, yeah.
Okay, all right. Crazy.
That is kind of insane. On your list there, do they have candy corn?
They do.
Because candy corn would be my favorite Halloween candy.
Oh, that's disgusting.
I know. And a lot of people think it's disgusting, but I love candy corn.
Okay, so, wow.
It's probably similar to Skittles. It's all sugar.
Okay, here's the thing. I thought Skittles were bad. Okay. So, you want to take a guess on the carbs?
67.
Mine says 71.
71. For how many pieces?
One bag.
One bag. I don't know how big exactly a bag is, but...
and of that, 71 grams of carbs is 71 grams of sugar.
So it's all sugar.
All sugar.
All sugar.
And the nutritional content for as far as fats and proteins isn't 0.1. It is zero.
Well, there's no room for anything else if it's 71 and 71.
Now, what's some of the preservatives? What are they cook that in? How they make it?
Well, sugar and corn syrup are the first two, the same as Skittles.
All right.
Then salt, sesame oil, acetyl oil. Honey. That's not bad.
Okay, well, honey's not bad.
Artificial flavor, food coloring, gelatin, and confectioner's glaze, which is probably the outer coating.
Okay.
But the food colorings are not good. Artificial flavors are not good, and all the sugar.
Yeah. Was there food? Did they have dyes in the Skittles?
It didn't say food coloring specifically, but there has to be something.
There's got to be.
To color it.
Their colors are not natural.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so as I'm looking quickly on this list, I'm going down here, and there's probably 20, 25 listed candies on here. I would the candy corn is the highest.
The worst one for you.
The worst one for you.
Yeah. But I'll be honest with you, anytime that I do eat some candy corn, it makes me feel terrible. Well, I have to stick to like once a year because I pay for it.
Well, and ironically, I'm not much better. My favorite, which is Skittles, is number two.
Oh, yeah.
So the two things that if we had our dithers and they didn't hurt us are the two things that are worse for us.
You know? Yeah.
Outside of maybe some of the preservatives that they put in the other candy, because I'm not going to disregard that. You know, sometimes, you know, straight sugar is better than some of the dyes that cause cancer.
Well, I was looking here because it had the artificial colors in the candy corn. So I looked up what those were. It's red 40.
Oh, that's not good.
Red number 3, yellow number 5.
All three of those aren't good.
And none of them are good.
No, those are terrible for you.
Yeah. So there is the dyes.
Okay, well, that exponentially raises their bad value for you, Sid.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
Now, again, Halloween night, you want to have a couple pieces of candy corn and throw the rest away. Your kidneys will filter it. But you don't want to be eating those things every day.
Oh, no, not at all.
No, not at all.
No, but yeah, we've talked about that before. And the problem with, and this is something we're going to talk about coming up in future episodes as we head into the holiday season, but the problem is that the holiday season that we're going into, stuff tends to kind of snowball.
Yeah.
It's not a problem to, you know, have some candy on Halloween. It's not a problem to eat poorly on Thanksgiving. It's not a problem, you know, Christmas. But then you start piling all this together in the Christmas season, and every weekend you're going out and doing things. And just be careful. Just for today. But then today becomes next weekend, which becomes every weekend, which becomes multiple times in the weekend, which becomes throughout the week, and it snowballs.
Right,
so it's okay, and you want to limit it, but be very careful that you're intentional about your limitations.
Well, the one that's not on here that I'm surprised is, unless I'm not seeing it, is M&M's.
Well, let me look it up.
Because I had my first pack of M&M's last night at a party. It was the snack size.
M&M's.
Ooh. Peanut M&M's, so extra nutritional value.
Okay, so I've got the peanut M&M's pulled up here. Uh-huh. Do you want to take a guess at, serving size is 12 M&M's.
There's probably 8 in this pack, but okay, serving size is 12. And this is the peanut?
The peanut M&M's, yes.
Okay, all right. So take a guess on what?
Let's guess the sugars.
Sugars. I'm going to say 35 grams.
In 12 M&M's?
Uh-huh.
No, it's only 15.
Oh, okay.
But that's still over 1 gram of sugar per M&M.
Well, that's impressive.
17 grams of carbohydrates.
Okay.
And it does have 7 grams of fats, which probably comes from the chocolates and the peanuts.
Yeah.
And 3 grams of protein.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not terrible. But what are the food colors?
Let me look up the ingredients list, see if I can find it. M&M's ingredient label. Peanut M&M's. Okay, let's see if I can read this. Milk chocolate, sugar, chocolate, skim milk, cocoa butter, lactose, milk fat, peanuts, soy lecithin,
salt, not good.
natural flavors, peanuts, sugar, cornstarch. Those are the main ingredients.
Okay.
The rest of these, it says, is less than 1% of the total ingredients.
Okay.
That's palm oil, corn syrup, dextrin, colors, including blue 1, yellow 6, red 40, yellow 5, blue 1, yellow 8, red 40 lake, yellow 5 lake, blue 2 lake, and blue 2. And then it finishes up with Carnauga wax and gum acacia.
Okay. Okay. So, still has all the things that we talk that we want to try to avoid.
Yeah, I can't. Well, you know, the only difference here is there is a little bit of, like, they have milk in there because it's chocolate.
Right.
And there's some skim milk. There's some cocoa butter, lactose, milk fat. Some of those things we think are okay.
Yeah.
You know, the main ingredient being milk.
Right.
But if you want milk, then just drink milk. You don't have to eat peanut M&Ms in order to get your milk.
Right.
Or peanuts, same thing. Peanuts are going to be okay for you. Just don't coat them in chocolate.
Boy, you mentioned milk. I made it this morning. I got up. I've been having I get up in the morning, have a glass of milk, pour my shake, and then I get home from work and have a glass of milk. I mean, like, every time. This morning, I poured a little cream in my shake, and then I kind of got a spoonful of cream. I think cream is the essence of freshness. I mean, it's just like when you eat cream, I just think this is this is what freshness is. I just think fresh every time I take a bite or eat, drink a little bit of cream.
Mm-hmm.
So just reminded me of that this morning. I had a kind of an epiphany this morning when I was looking at, you know, had some cream. I'm like, this is amazing. Anyway.
Is good.
Yeah.
Do they have Snickers bars on that list?
They do.
I want to look into Snickers bars. I do like Snickers bars.
I
they
do.
May not be my go-to, but
it is
I
my,
do like
it,
them.
I've come to find out, it is my go-to for powerlifting.
We did find that out.
Yeah.
Instead of Skittles, what made you choose the Snickers instead of the Skittles?
Because I like, well, because Skittles, I don't know. I just, I think I would have gotten sick on Skittles.
Yeah, I agree. Snickers is a better choice.
Snickers, one bar, 35 carbohydrates, and 28 of that is sugar.
Now, can we see if by one bar, does this mean a big bar or like a fun size bar?
Well, I think it's the regular size.
The regular
bar.
Size. Yeah, so it's what, like about 5 inches long, maybe?
5 inches long, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because that's 280 calories, and I think that's about right for the...
280?
280.
That's kind of a lot when you think about it, given that most people, what, about 2,000 calories a day is an average. So if you ate like 7 Snickers bars, you would have your daily calorie total.
That's correct.
That's all you could eat for the whole day. 7
Well, you'd
Snickers
be you
bars.
Probably you might be able to get it in 6 actually.
Yeah, 6 would be
6.5 maybe.
That'd get you like 1700 calories.
Okay. I have to sit there and do math in my head. So if it was 300 times 7, that's 2100.
Mm-hmm.
So this is 280 times 7 is 350, so you'd be right. So you'd have to at least eat It's not quite 7, but it's pretty much 7. So,
yeah. So, the ingredients.
Before you get into the ingredients.
Okay.
Here we got. I think this is the highest on the list. Let me look here. Going through this list here of all the. Yeah, it is the highest on the list because I've looked at it. So, wow, that's a lot. Guess how much fat a Snickers bar has?
12 grams.
14.
How much protein does it have?
4.3,
man.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
We're going to be getting buff off some Snickers.
So I only need to eat 10 to get 40 grams. So I my experience with Snickers, so I don't eat candy bars. And, you know, as a reminder from the many shows back, when I had the Snickers, I felt it. I felt the rush, right? But about an hour and a half after, I was like dead man walking. I was like, all I wanted to do was sit down and rest. I could barely walk.
Yeah. Yeah. The sugar crash.
Yeah.
So then you want to hear the ingredients for the Snickers?
Hit me.
Milk chocolate, first ingredient.
Score.
Sugar. Cocoa butter.
Cocoa butter, okay.
Chocolate, skim milk, lactose, milk fat, and soy lecithin. And that's the ingredients of the milk chocolate. Then it's got peanuts, corn syrup, sugar, palm oil, salt, egg whites. Oh, look at that. And artificial flavors.
Well, we all know the artificial flavors is an umbrella term for all kinds of crap.
It essentially could mean anything.
Yeah.
Especially the artificial. Natural flavors is bad enough.
Yeah.
Artificial flavors, that could be anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how they get away with that. But anyway, that's beside the point. But here's the thing. So some of these things you would consider have healthy things, right? Like egg whites and nuts and... You know, and you in dark chocolate's usually better for you than milk chocolate. But how are these nuts, you know, processed? You know, how are the, I mean, because like, you know, if you get the nuts that have all the coatings on them or the salt on them, a lot of times those have been put through a process of added chemicals for the salt to stick on there. And if they're candy, almonds and stuff like that, they start to have additional items on them that start to make them not as healthy. And, you know, the milk, is it raw milk? Probably not.
Yeah, it's safe to say these are probably not pasture-raised egg whites that they're
That's
using.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Absolutely.
Any other interesting ones pop out on that list, Matt?
Let's see here. There's several. Let me see if there's one that's... Oh, this is funny. So... I thought that was a Tootsie Roll. These are Tootsie Pops.
Suckers.
Yeah, when I was growing up as a kid, Knights of Columbus on certain days would pass out Tootsie Rolls to all the kids coming out of church. I can't remember what the day was, but... You know, like a donation and you get a Tootsie Roll or something like that. And I loved that as a kid. But it's a Tootsie Pop, not a Tootsie Roll.
How many licks does it take to get to the center of the Tootsie Pop?
Yeah, the Tootsie Pop, 15 grams of carbohydrates and 11 grams of sugar.
Hmm.
But, you know, they have all these different flavors. And I'm sure they're artificial flavors, you know?
Yeah. Well, I bet you could guess the top two ingredients of a Tootsie Pop.
Corn syrup.
And?
Sugar.
Yep. Nailed it. When I looked it up, I was like, well, that's exactly what I expected.
Does the corn syrup, is that what makes the shape? What makes that shape? What's it consist of?
There's probably some bonding type stuff. There's palm oil in there. Condensed skim milk. Interesting. Cocoa, whey, artificial and natural flavors. They just did both. They just lumped both together.
Okay. All right. So let's get the one that has the... To finish this off, let's get the one that has the highest fat and the highest protein.
Ooh, interesting. I would love to know what candy's the highest fat and highest protein.
The highest protein is, you want to take a guess?
Butterfinger.
You're correct. Yeah, 5 grams of protein in a Butterfinger.
I think it's because of the peanut butter?
Must be. And a comparable 10 grams of fat.
Okay.
That's not the highest fat, but that's second highest. Or no, it's not the second highest, but it's one of the higher ones.
Well, here's the thing, guys. You know, we always talk to you about, even if you're going to, you know, it's okay to be bad, eat a bad stuff every now and again. But if you're going to be bad, at least still try to be a little bit good. So if you're going to have candy, you might as well eat the high protein candy. Might as well eat the Butterfinger, right?
I'm thinking about how you open that. If I were to like take that out of context and say, it's okay to be bad. I was like, follow it up real quick.
We're gonna have kids like at Halloween going around like, I don't want those Skittles. Give me that high protein candy. Give me those Butterfingers.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the highest fat is one that we already covered, which is the Snickers. Has the highest fat content on this. Oh, wait. I gotta zoom in on that. Yeah, it has the highest fat content of all these different candies, Halloween candies, with a close second of Payday at 13.
I would kind of break candies down into two categories. You have your strictly sugar-based candies, uh-huh. And then you have kind of your chocolate-based candies.
Yeah.
There's kind of those two groups, like your chocolate-based, like your Snickers, your Butterfinger, you know, your Payday, like Hershey, whatever.
Right.
And then you have like your sugar-based, your Skittles, candy corn, that type of category.
Right.
Where it's just all sugar.
Right.
Not that either of them are good for you, but at least the chocolate-based ones seem to have a little bit more in terms of protein, fats. They're not just eating pure sugar.
Correct. Yeah, and I just came across another one here. Reese's has 5 grams of protein in it.
Oh, so Reese's is another good one. Yeah. I'm finding the consistency between the protein content and the peanut butter content.
Exactly. And it's fat in the Reese's is 12.
So. Okay. Reese's is another fan favorite. I know a lot of people like the Reese's.
Yeah, I always, you know, if I was in the past when I was a younger, always enjoyed a good Reese's.
Yeah, know? I'll eat them for sure, but they're definitely not my favorite.
Yeah, and now my wife's favorite here. Red Hots are similar to, they're like those, they look like a pill,
you know,
and they also have different types of those, which my wife, she doesn't eat them anymore, but when we go to the movies, sometimes she would get those. And so this is for my wife. What's in these? Could you look up the content of Red Hots?
Yes.
I told her I'd mention her on the show. So she is doing very well with the carbohydrates, which is 25 pieces is 15 grams of carbs.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
What's the sugar?
Sugar is 12.
Okay.
Okay. So 12 grams for 25 pieces. Now, what's the ingredients?
Well, I'm going to give you one guess at what the top two ingredients are.
Red dye number 5.
On Red Hots? It could be.
Corn syrup and sugar.
Yep. Corn syrup and sugar. Top two.
Yeah.
Acacia gum, which, you know, probably a bonding agent. Artificial flavors, which who knows what that is. Confectioner's glaze, which I think is the outer coating. Carnauba wax, probably another bonding agent. White mineral oil, not exactly sure what that is.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
And then Red 40.
Red 40,
you gotta know there's a lot of Red 40.
Yeah, and did they put that at the bottom?
Well, there's two more, cornstarch and sunflower lecithin.
Oof. Yeah, not good. So, but I will say that my wife used to be a candy fiend. She doesn't eat much candy anymore. So, that's a good thing.
Let's think about this, Matt. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, we all have seen ingredient labels. We're reading them out on the podcast today. But
right.
Let's say that you had no idea if candy was good for you or not. What are some signs that help you realize if it's good for you or not, right? Because you read the ingredients list. We know these ingredients are bad. Mm-hmm. We know that the macronutrient profile is bad. But what if you're somebody that didn't know that?
Well,
what are some telltale signs that this is a bad food?
Well, I mean, a lot of times you would have to kind of base if a food's bad or not, depending on how it makes you feel, right? If you feel like crap after you eat it, which is usually an equation of high sugar, like, you mean, watch your kids. I remember one of my kids that eat sugar, they're like running around like banshees, and then suddenly they just crash. I remember thinking, that doesn't seem good. So there's that standpoint. But, you know, there's a side of it that there's the longer-term effect. You know, there's the immediate effect of how you feel immediately. And then there's the long-term effect of what happens to your body. And you have to look at what you eat. Because essentially, you know, if you eat healthy, you know, you're not going to have much muscle mass, but you can be, you know, not fat.
Like if you didn't work out.
Yeah, if you didn't work out, you're not going to be strong. You're not going to, you know, probably fight off disease because you have a lot of muscle mass. But you would be a light person. I mean, you wouldn't be a fat person because you're eating healthy. So I think that is, some of the immediate effects. What were you trying to get at?
No, I think that's very true. How it makes you feel is a really big indicator of the health of a food.
Yeah.
Number one, I would also say the processing and the packaging. If it comes in a package and it's processed, it's bad for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the first signs. You don't even have to look at the ingredients list. I can tell you a lot of times on a product based on the processing and the packaging, if it's going to be good for you or not.
Yeah.
Oh, so I think that's a big indicator.
Well, you know, it does seem to be associated with the packaging. You know, the more flashy the packaging is, the more likely there's some crap in it that is not going to be that great for you.
Well, yeah, go to go to the store and go to the produce section or the meat section. Really, either of these two works. In the produce section, how is stuff packaged? Well, usually it's just right there by itself. Apple, an orange, you know, you can just pick it up right out of the case. Sometimes if it's a smaller produce like blueberries or strawberries or something, it'll be in a package, but it's a clear packaging so you can see the product directly.
Right.
You still see that blueberry, that strawberry. In the meat case, it's clear packaging so you can see the meat down in there. Now think about the processed foods. Name me a processed food that you can see the food from outside the package, or it doesn't come in a package. Usually can't. Usually it's in a package. Think about all these candies. These candies, you don't actually see what's inside the package when you're looking at it. The package is completely enclosed and doesn't let you see the actual product that you're purchasing. That's one of the main differences.
Well, you know, the nature of, you know, vegetables and fruit is they have their own self-contained packaging. Comes with the growth, right? You can't have a stack of, you know, Snickers bars just sitting there and pick them up. And get, you know, they're going to start melting together and they'd be all one big chunk. That's why they have to package them like that. So I think, you know, except for like, you know, maybe, you know, you can go into those, you know, jelly bean dispensers and the Nerds dispensers where they have that really hard shell, and they're not as susceptible to their environments, so you can get those. But for the majority of candies, they're all packaged.
Yeah, and that goes for pretty much any processed food.
Yeah,
you can't really even see it. The only other thing I would throw out for the candy in knowing how it's not good for you is the taste.
Right.
How that hits you when you put it in your mouth, it's like an explosion.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a softer, kind of soothing richness. It's like just an explosion of the sugars and the flavors in your mouth, and that's kind of how you know it's probably not natural for you to consume.
Well, think about this. The majority of Americans have been eating so poorly for so long, they don't know the difference.
That's true. That's very right? true. It takes some time to learn that.
Yeah. I mean, they were born and raised into it, starting as kids, eating this stuff, you know, not eating the freshest things that we both know about. That's kind of like I was talking about earlier. It's like, I think the freshest taste on the planet to me is drinking straight cream. You know, I don't just get a glass of it because it's too valuable to do that. But it's just to me, it's just the epitome of freshness. And when I think of like I call it the Doritos effect, right? You know, where it's just an explosion, you know, like intense taste. And so when you think about that, that's when you start start understanding the difference. It's like that intense taste is not natural.
Yeah, I agree. Any other candies you want to touch on?
No, I think we've covered our, you know, our views on Halloween candy and what that our listeners understand the pros and cons of you know, take it if you're going to have some, just have a little and be mindful. You know, I know all our kids go out, you know, or I should, my kids are grown up, but when the kids go out and they get a, you know, they'll get like a pillowcase full of candy, right? And be mindful that they shouldn't be finishing that candy inside a week.
Or I would say maybe they shouldn't be having all of it anyway.
Yeah. Well,
whenever that is.
Yeah. And I know some parents will actually like allow the kids to pick out their favorites and then disperse it over time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's probably the best way to do it, is like, you know, take out the things you really don't want them to have and mm-hmm. and disperse it over time, but at the very least, don't let them sit down the whole next day and just eat the whole bag.
No,
you know, so
nope. So something to think about as we have Halloween this yes. week.
Yes.
So Matt, what are we going to get to today for the rest of the show?
So I wanted to kind of talk about how valuing your fitness and steps to do that. You know, we have, and it's a, I don't want to say it's a global issue. I want to say it's an American issue or maybe a Western issue. And that is understanding how valuable fitness is. And when it comes to people cutting their expenses, some things to think about, you know. So the first topic or step on this process of identifying, you know, what steps to take to value your fitness is to determine your core values. Okay. So that would be like, do you value health? Do you value longevity, energy levels, quality of life? Or do you value, I have a, you know, Mercedes, Gucci purse, you know, $500 pair of jeans, whatever, those type of things. I'm not saying, I'm not going to get into like, hey, spending money on high dollar items is wrong or right, but it does become impractical when you take that, or you determine that in your core values over your health.
Yeah, so typically for people, well, I guess for everybody, time and money are limited resources.
Correct.
And you have to pick some sort of prioritization on those two things. And like you said, where does fitness fall in? I would say, you know, people should, I want you guys to think very intently about when you put those priorities at the top of your list, how does your health relate to those priorities? Because is my fitness the top thing on my priority list? No, but I can tie how my fitness plays into those things. What is the top thing on my priority list? My relationship with God.
Number one.
What does God tell me in the Bible? It tells me to treat my body like a temple.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What's number two on my priority list? My family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's an important thing in order for me to be able to provide for my family, protect my family, be around for my family for a long time? Is my health.
Right.
As you go down this list, you're going to find that health is a key factor in almost every priority that you have, which in turn means that health and fitness in and of itself should be a high priority.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, an important thing when we think about, you know, listing out our priorities and figuring out what's important for our values. Think about how fitness plays a factor into those values.
They're related.
Mm-hmm.
How good of a provider can you be if you're, you know, 350 pounds sitting on a couch and have trouble, get exhausted just moving?
It's very difficult.
Yeah. And if you, because of the foods you ate over decades, you now find that you have disease when you're in your 50s, when your kids are probably still fairly young. So these are the things that we need to think about, when, especially, you know, longevity. You know, that's what I think about. You know, I'll take it last night. last night I was kind of the butt of some jokes about my age. But
it's everywhere you go.
Yeah, everywhere I go. And that's fine because I can usually do more than they can in the gym. And so I they have no excuse. I don't want to hear it, but so we just have a little fun with it. But, you know, it's that's the thing that's important, is understanding that it doesn't matter. Your age is, you know, plays a factor in your fitness, but it doesn't limit you from getting your exercise in. And so it's very important. That's why I do what I do, is I want to be around for my kids. I want to be around for them later in life. And so I plan on making fitness fitness is my lifestyle. No question. I try to help my clients understand that as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So secondly on this list is very important, and this kind of plays off number one point, differentiate between wants and needs.
Mm.
So, you know, so wants being clothes, gadgets, dining out, needs being food, shelter, health, right? So think about that for a second. I've heard many times people make comments about the how expensive health is, or to acquire health, to maintain health, and then they'll go out and buy a very expensive item. And so they don't seem to correlate. It's like, wait, this item you don't need. It's not an item that's necessary it's a want, not a need. People need to change that aspect to understand your health is a need. And just because you can function, get up, have breakfast, you know, be calling your daily routine. If your daily routine is compromised, how effective are you in your life, right? You're not as effective as being productive and doing your duties in life. And that's, so people need to view their health as a need and not a want, so that they go back to the first one, which is identify your core values. So this helps do that.
Well, I think it's a little bit sad knowing that there are people out there that don't treat their health as a need.
Right.
Because, I mean, if we break it down, if you don't have health, like if you're in very poor health,
right,
then your life is probably in danger of ending.
Yes.
And if it ends, none of the other stuff matters.
Yeah.
You know, ask somebody who's, you know, on their deathbed, especially prematurely on their deathbed.
Right.
You know, and ask them how much of their money they'd be willing to spend to get healthy and survive. And it would probably be all of it.
Yeah. I'll relay a story with my father-in-law. I remember those exact words coming out of his mouth. So he was within a few days of passing, which we didn't know at the time, but we knew it was imminent. And I remember him saying something about, I don't know how it came up, but we were sitting with him as a family, and we were trying to spend a lot of time with him at the end. And, you know, he had a coin collection. You know, and he says, that just doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. You know, and he said, he mentioned a few other possessions and how they had no value at that time of death. Zero. And so we have to kind of put those in perspective. You know, it's easy to think things have value. And I think we all get caught up in that to some extent. Things have value when we have time. But you don't take them with you. So your health is something that you should value now.
Can we put a number? Let's put a number on this. Just a broad estimation. What would you say the value would be of an extra 10 years of quality life, extending your life by 10 years? Let's say you knew that you were going to die at 70, you know, and you were going to have a quality life up to that point. But you could purchase the ability to live until 80 with a quality life. What would be the value of that?
That's hard to measure. I mean, you can do it from, you can measure it from several different aspects. You know, one way you can measure it from billable time. If you were to, just like, hey, if I work 40 hours a week, and, you know, let's just say something moderate of $30 an hour, $1,200 a week, you know, $4,800 a month. You know, so you're looking at just under 60,000 a year times that by 10, so 600,000 to purchase an extra 10 years from that standpoint.
I would say it's well beyond that.
Yeah, it is well beyond that. So I'd say that would just be that. I think some people might pay, you know, millions of dollars to that, you know, 5 million, 10 million.
Probably whatever they had, you know.
Yeah.
A large portion of whatever they had.
You know, maybe they give up everything, their boats, their house, their, you know, because they realize they just need enough money to survive and they go live in an apartment to get that extra 10 years. Yeah, I could see how that. And that's if you gave them the choice that they saw it coming.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say, you know, people want to live a quality of life while they're down here. So if you, like a lot of people, myself included, there are certain things that I would not want to sacrifice for the sake of living longer. Like, you know, if I have to stay inside, like the people that, I'm going to stay inside and not live my life because if I go outside, something might happen. I might get in a car wreck or I might, you know, whatever could happen. I might get sun cancer or skin cancer from the sun or might get whatever, you know. And so there's a certain, it's worth living your life.
Right.
But the point being, just adding on some quality years, it almost doesn't have a value. It's so valuable. Whereas a lot of these possessions, right, they have a value. They have, you know, a car is X amount of dollars. Your dream car is X amount of dollars. It's finite value. This is almost your health is a priceless thing. It's like your family.
Right.
How much money would you spend to save your kid's life? You would spend every dime you had.
Right.
You know, same should be same with your life. If you're, especially if you're of a, still of a younger age or a normally healthy age.
Right. So, number three is after you kind of, if you correctly determine what you're supposed to determine, which would be, you know, okay, I've prioritized my fitness as a need. How do you design your fitness? What are your fitness goals, right? So probably those fitness goals need to revolve around longevity and adding muscle mass, keeping and basically being able to do the daily tasks that you need to do that are easy when we're in our 20s and 30s, like moving furniture or moving boxes or picking up a child. Or these are things that become very real to you as you get in your 60s, 70s, and 80s, right? Because I hear it all the time. I just want to be able to pick my grandson up. I want to be able to play with my grandkids. I have clients who have said that to me. I want to be able to play with my grandkids, right? And that's why they're there, you know, because they understand how practical that is. That's a very natural function that we take for granted. You know, they want to be able to go down the steps. They want to be able to go up the steps. They want to be able to walk without worrying about falling over. These are all things that if you are already doing these things, then you don't have to worry about when you're 60 and 70. Because I have clients that came to me when they're 60 and 70 and they've realized diminished abilities. Okay. So when you're talking about these things, set your fitness goals. Obviously those are going to change a little bit when you're younger versus when you're older. But if you determine early on that this is going to be a lifestyle, and that would be my suggestion, that this is going to be a lifestyle in your 20s, 30s, and on for the rest of your life, then your goals are going to be fairly consistent. You know, stay healthy, stay mobile, keep a range of motion, and by being active.
Yeah, I think really when it comes to fitness goals, it boils down to two things for a lot of people. Number one, you mentioned longevity. And then number two, I would say functionality.
Mm-hmm.
And functionality can mean many different things because it depends on the function that you're trying to achieve. But you talked about being able to do daily tasks.
Right.
Or some people, functionality might be picking up your grandkids. Some people, functionality is I want to win a powerlifting meet. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's different levels of it. But think about longevity terms. What do I need to do to achieve my longevity goals?
Right.
And then what do I need to do to achieve my functionality goals in the moment?
Right.
And kind of match those two up. So for me, you know, my goals in the moment are much more, I guess, longevity-based mm-hmm. than functionality-based. Because functionality, I'm just trying to keep the functionality I have. You know, I'm pretty well as strong as I would want to be. Pretty well in shape as I want to be. Might want to improve my cardiovascular shape a little bit just because that I tend to neglect that a little bit.
Right.
But mainly I'm focused on longevity. How can I make sure that I'm as healthy as I can be as long as I can be into my life? And that's why the diet is so important for me right now and figuring out how to structure my diet in a way that's the most healthy.
I wish I weighed... You were talking about you wish your cardiovascular or respiratory, did you say vascular or respiratory? Or cardio?
Cardiovascular condition, yeah.
So many years ago, probably 2 years ago, me and you had a competition.
We did? What was our competition?
The push-up challenge.
Oh, the push-up challenge,
I feel like you're susceptible right now, except I weigh too much.
I say I'm way lighter probably than I was during that push-up challenge.
Yeah.
I don't think I could bench as much either. But
no, but you could, but there's a balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I might be stronger than I was then, but I'm pushing an extra 30 pounds every push,
mm-hmm.
you know, so then that starts to wear down on you. So there's that balance you need to have. And that time I weighed 183, 185, you know, so... Someday I want to reinitiate that challenge.
You're gonna probably pick me on my worst day.
I'm gonna wait till you're down, and I come down on my weight, and I'm like at 180, so I'm ready.
I'm gonna start training push-ups.
Yeah,
a little bit more.
Okay, fourth one. Okay, so now we've covered three components, and just to review those real quick: identifying your values. Differentiate between wants and needs, so we determine what has value over other things that are more valuable, because a need is always more valuable. We determine that health is a need, and then setting your fitness goals around that need of health, and then creating a budget around that
So when we talk about budget, I want to kind of maybe preface by saying people think financial when it comes to budget, which is absolutely true in your fitness. But also when you think about the other things that we're going to budget, like our time. Right? Yes. We have a finite amount of time.
Very good.
You know, budget not just strictly financially, but how are we going to budget all of our resources to allocate the accurate amount to fitness? Because budgeting for your fitness, well, what about budgeting for your groceries, right? Are you willing to spend the extra money to get the quality groceries?
Right.
You know, all these things factor into play.
Right. Yeah. So this one is, it kind of refers to that. So, but it's talking about, you know, your expenses, talking about your gym membership, your food budget, right? Healthy food, like I say, not just groceries, but healthy groceries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then before considering any discretionary spending, you are looking at your health first. So, you know, this is where we get into what we were talking about earlier, is like discretionary spending being things that are wants, okay, that your health should become before that. So if you're looking at, let's say you want to buy a new car stereo for your car, you want to get this big boom box, and that really make, you know, that'd be so cool. You know, you love music, right? And I understand a lot of people, that almost becomes a need, right? Which it shouldn't be, but they make it that way. I've seen it to where people got to have their cable television because they can't almost function without it. They have to have their streaming channels, right? These entertainment type things that people have elevated to the point of need, you know, where they're putting that in front of things that are actual needs. So when it comes to your health, sometimes health takes a back seat to your entertainment, and people need to reverse that.
I feel like something that just came to mind when you were talking about that, most of those things that you mentioned there in terms of entertainment are all subscription based.
Yes.
And so it's almost like it's just an automatic. It's a recurring. You set up your auto pay on your credit card, and it just comes out every month, and you just bake it into your budget every month. And it's almost becomes a need. It becomes a just part of it.
Right.
And then you come to your discretionary spending. You're like, all right, we've got this amount left over. And if you know, a lot of gym memberships are the same way. They're just recurring. They're every month. They're the same. And you just kind of bake that in. People will typically bake in a certain amount for groceries too, and that's just the same every month. But, you know, think about your entertainment more from, you know, every month when you're thinking about what you're going to spend on what. Your $50 a month for whatever entertainment thing.
Right.
Do I need this month? You know, you can cancel. It's not that hard to cancel. If you want to start it back up, they'll take you back.
Yeah.
You know what
There's
I mean?
No problem with that.
There's actually a law or a court case or something that was settled recently, which is like the click to cancel, where it's supposed to make it easier for people to cancel subscriptions.
Oh, that would be nice.
But that's a thing I think that's going to start going into effect.
Yeah, it needs to be a lot easier to cancel because sometimes it's buried, or you have to get to the right page or find the right person or call the right number or, you know, send it to the right email. They make it a little difficult to cancel things. Like all your Apple, now, once I figured this out, it's not terrible, but like if you have subscriptions in Apple, you don't go back to the place to where is the brand or the, which is the service provider to cancel. You go back to Apple Tunes, cancel there, right? You cancel subscription there, not somewhere else. So, you know, but I remember the first time I was like, how the hell did I cancel this? This was probably several years ago. And I finally figured out, oh, I have to go to Apple iTunes or applications, whatever, and get into my account, see what my monthly purchases are, and cancel there. So, you know, from that standpoint, it made it easier. But there is a lot of difficulty in canceling. It's like usually they make it a little more difficult.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, talking about gyms make it kind of difficult, too.
Yeah.
A lot of times they do. And yeah. I don't know about specifics other than I've heard people with Planet Fitness, they, like, won't cancel their membership because you have to go in person to the location that you originally signed up with and fill out a bunch of paperwork in order to cancel.
Yeah, well, and that's I've actually heard this story before. Someone that came here, I don't remember who they were, this was probably 5-6 months ago, had a Planet Fitness membership. They moved from to another state, and then they went to the Planet Fitness there, and then they determined after so much time that I don't want this anymore, and that's what they found out. They had to go back and just to cancel. Well, think about the cost to go back. You know, it's just like it was worth probably, you know, 6 months or a year of 1 year of Planet Fitness to go back and cancel it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So then that makes you think, it ain't worth going back, and then you end up keeping it.
Right.
But let's talk a little bit about budgeting your time.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just as important as figuring out how to budget the money. Right? You sit down, you need to allocate, you know, when you, like your finances, you sit down. Okay, you know, we have this much money coming in. We want to allocate this much to, you know, this much is our needs, right? This much is our discretionary, and we want to prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have discretionary income and your priority, you determine that your health is priority, you're going to spend what you feel is necessary to fulfill your health needs. But time, really, we should think about it the same way. We sit down, we have our needs, our absolute must, which is like sleep. We have to put sleep in there. You can't not sleep. You
right.
know, you have to put time to eat, time to work if you need to earn money, all these things. Then you have your discretionary time, the time left over. What are you going to fill that time with? And that's where you think back to, okay, what are my needs? Well, I need to be healthy for these reasons. So then cutting out time out of that leftover discretionary time that's going to go into working on my health and fitness.
Right. Yeah. Do you think there's ever, and there's always an exception to the rule. Okay. I don't want to say that, but for the majority of Americans or majority of the world's population, do you think there's everyone's too busy to exercise?
I don't think anybody's too busy to exercise. Everyone has the same 24 hours in the day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference between the time and the money. Some people have more money than others, but everyone has the exact same 24 hours in the day.
Right. So when someone comes to you and they say, I don't have enough time, but I'm willing to have you sit down with me and help me determine if that is actually true, what would you do?
Well, I would audit them in the same way that I would audit their finances if they asked me the question financially. Hey, I want to work with you, but I don't have the money. What can I cut out? Right. So we're going to sit down. We're going to look at their schedule, and we're going to put the important things in first. Sleep is important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to get your sleep in. You got to get your work day in. But everybody has time outside of that, unless you literally are working. And some people might do this. Some people might work 16 hours a day and sleep 8 hours a day. Then mm-hmm. you're done with your 24 hours. But I might argue, do you really need to work 16 hours a day?
Oh, exactly.
Or some other activity, some other thing they participate in. You know, what are we doing during this 30-minute block right here? Oh, you know, usually, like, I scroll my social media. Well, what if you were, you know, even if you don't have time to travel to a gym in that 30-minute block, it's like, you know, people that watch TV, get the commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Do some sit-ups. Do some push-ups. Do some squats. You know, you have a little break at your house. Think about some things you could do. You know, stretch for a little bit. Do some planks. There are body weight things you can do in these little time slots that everybody can find time for.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I have a client that is in a very powerful position. I mean, like, high level. And constantly, I mean, making multi-million dollar decisions all the time, a lot of pressure, working 12 to 14 hour days, you know, just nonstop, gets to work at like, you know, 5:30 in the morning and work until, you know, six, sometimes gets off around five, or sometimes work till six, seven, and even all the way eight or nine at night. So a lot of hours, right? I did that once. I used to work 80 hours a week, and I made the decision no more. Okay. Because not just from a, it was not just from a mental aspect, but all of the above, my health, my the mental drain that it was on me, the lack of family time, what it was doing to my relationships. I made a decision. So you have to, those are things you need to think about. You know, do if I work less hours, will I make less money? Probably. But that is a decision, you know, when you're working, if you, someone, like you say, if someone's working 16 hours a day and they're sleeping eight, I would make the argument they need to make a change.
Yes, I agree. And that may come with, you know, the change in the budgeting of your time may lead to a change in the budgeting of your finances. Because if you're going to choose to work less in order to focus more on your fitness, that's going to change financially. So then, right, you know, we may need to look at some of the wants that are in your budget that we can also cut out.
Right.
And it's a restructuring based on your values, I mean, which is what we're talking about today.
Right.
But it's an audit. I mean, how often, and I don't know, I'm maybe different than other people, how often would you say you sit down to audit how you're spending your money and or how you're spending your time?
Yeah.
What would you say?
I would say I probably do that once every 2 or 3 weeks. I just find that I constantly have to, because life is ever changing and I have to be ever adjusting, you know, to accommodate. So like one of the things I go through, I'll use myself as an example because it's, the, you know, the power of referral or reference to myself. You know, I've lost 7-8 pounds in the last two or three months, which is showing up in strength differences everywhere in all my lifts. And it's not surprising because I just have a harder time maintaining my eating schedule while at my current job. So I sat down and I said, how am I going to get ready for 2025? I'm going to have to make some adjustments to my lifestyle. And how, so now I, one little thing, I'm going to be cooking at the gym, and so I can get my protein, hit my protein goals, my calorie goals, so I don't have to leave the house because I'm having trouble right now prepping at home.
I just want to point out who had that idea.
that would be Parker McBride.
I gave you that idea way back when I was, you like, did? Man, you need to put a grill out back and just start grilling your meat right here.
That's right. And I did that. I grilled up 3 pounds of meat for the next several days. So, but yeah, that's, I just had to reevaluate, you know, my goals and adjust my lifestyle slightly so that I can get ready for 2025, because I'm going to take November, December. So this is what I'm talking about is that you do have to readjust because things change, right? I had a family member that just came back home just yesterday, and so now there's that new dynamic in the house and the adjustments I have to make there. So you have to constantly reevaluate because the life around you, you can't control it. You can only control how you adapt to it. And so I don't use that as an excuse as, oh, you know, I got so many people in the household, I don't have any time to do fitness. I have, you know, I work from, I can see me saying that if I was not willing to change. Hey man, I get here and it's 7 a.m. and I work until here until 5 or 6 p.m. I don't have time to eat. Can't use that as an excuse. You just have to change. You have to adapt, you know, because you have goals. The only way you're going to reach your goals is to change how you view the time.
Yeah, I agree completely. Well, let's talk a little bit about budgeting for your food.
Yeah.
Because that's another piece of this when it comes to health. It's not just when are you working out. It's also what are you eating and how are we budgeting our resources to make sure we can eat healthy. And the thing that comes to mind for me on this first and foremost is most people are already budgeting enough resources towards their food in order to eat healthy. It just may take a restructuring.
Right.
If you look, sit down and put together the total amount that you spend on your food every month, whether it's groceries, whether it's dining out, whether it's, you know, coffees at Starbucks, whatever it is, put that total together. If you shifted some of that money away from eating out or buying, you know, processed junk and put it more into buying healthy, good quality foods, you could afford to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
We've talked about it before,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
The amount of money that it costs to eat healthy. And people say it costs a lot, and it can. But if you are able to change that structure, dining out, you know, you're talking about spending just for one person probably $20 at least to
right.
go somewhere. If you go somewhere nicer, even more than that. Well, what can $20 buy you in a grocery store? You could get a dozen eggs and a pound of ground beef and, you know, and some produce, you know, some fruit and vegetables, all for $20.
Yeah.
And that's plenty of food for
well, I, that, that's
a
where
day.
We talked, I might have just talked about this in the last show, but there's one food out there that I think even at, I mean, right now it's at about 50 cents an, per egg. Okay.
You're talking about eggs?
Yeah.
So a dozen eggs.
50, so that's about $6 for, you know, give or take, depending on where you're buying them. You can pay all the way up to $8 or $9 or, you know, $5 or $6. You go to the farmer's market, you're looking at $6 or $7. I'm trying to determine when that would be a bad value, even at $10. Considering what you get in those eggs, that is, if they're farm fresh, if you spend $10 on it, I mean, obviously I'd want to avoid spending $10 on that. I'd go find out there's other options to get it cheaper. But let's say all eggs started at $10. Okay. Considering all the other foods out there, and I'm, you know, it's eggs are like, it's hard to say, you know, what's too much for eggs. Because eggs are like the perfect food.
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of foods out there that I spend my money on that if I had to, I would be willing to spend more on.
Yeah.
And even sometimes significantly more on.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that, the eggs. Yeah, I'm going to make sure that I get good quality eggs. And it would take a pretty big increase in the price in order to price me out of buying my eggs.
Yeah.
Or I would just get some chickens in that case and yeah. do it myself. It got yeah. too expensive.
But yeah. I mean, at some point that becomes the option, right?
Because it's, and the reason that we say this is because it's a high priority for us.
Right.
And we're willing to make it work. We're willing to pull money from other things in order to put towards quality food, and we're willing to go to great lengths in order to make sure that we can do that.
Right. Yeah. Well, we kind of covered some of these things by just going forward. I mean, we kind of got to one of our points, and we got to budget, and that kind of covered number 5 and number 6, because number 5 was mindful spending. Okay.
Yeah.
So we covered that. Then in some ways we kind of talked about this, but what kind is fitness an investment?
Oh, I think it's potentially the purest form of investment out there. You're spending money on one. You don't always even have to spend money, but you spend time and money, usually a combination thereof. You spend an hour working out. You spend money getting the better quality food. You spend money on a gym membership. You spend money on a trainer. You know, you spend money on a meal plan, whatever it may be. and you're spending time working in order to earn the money to buy these things.
Correct.
All of that goes into a bank account. Think about that for a minute. When you work, you make money, it goes into your bank account. Your bank account gets bigger. Everyone understands that. Think about a health bank account. I spend an hour working out. Boom, my health bank account goes up. I eat, you know, eggs, good quality eggs and produce for my meal instead of going out and eating, you know, donuts or something. Boom, my health bank account goes up.
Right.
Every time you do that, you're adding to that bank account, that savings account. And then it's going to pay you dividends down the road. Because if you're doing that throughout your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, all of a sudden you're in your 60s or 70s and you've got this health bank account that's way up in the millions.
Yeah.
And it's now you're living the benefit of those because you're 70 years old and you still feel great.
Yeah.
You're walking around, even running around, and you feel good. You're still active, busy in your life, social. You can do all the things that you want to do, and you can live off that. Whereas the opposite, if you draw from that bank account, oh, I really want to eat out and eat bad food. I really don't want to go to the gym today. Boom. Debit, debit, debit to that bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the way your health bank account works, in your financial bank account, if it hits zero, if you run out of money, you can do bankruptcy and start over.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how your health bank account works.
No.
If your health bank account hits zero, you're done.
Yeah.
You're dead.
Yeah.
And so be very careful about letting that health bank account get too low. Think about it like an investment. Think about it like a bank account. Every time you spend time, every time you spend money on your health, it's increasing that. Likewise, every time you make a poor decision for your health, it's debiting from that account.
Well, I think that's the purest form, like you said. It's like nothing, there is no purer form of investment and return on that investment than exercise, right? You get out of it what you put in it. And it works every time. I mean, I have all my clients are like, if they put the effort in, they get the results they want. And I see it every single time. So it's the purest form. If you don't put a lot into it, you're not going to get a lot of change.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking of a good friend of that we both have trained, and he sent me his scan results. That would be Spencer. He did a scan recently. He's been getting kind of strong on the, you know, he's put some time in. He's starting to avoid some of these injuries. And, you know, through the 85, he's up for 5 times. Okay. Went and did a body scan, 95 pounds of muscle mass, 13% body fat. He sent that to me. I said, this is a very good scan. Very good. And I said, I don't know what your last scan was, but I'm telling you, this is a very good scan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but he's been putting that investment in, and because he comes in and he works hard, he's getting a return on it. So mm-hmm. this is what I'm talking about. And you know, all my clients, when they work hard and they do with me, they're going to get a return. It's just if they support it with the nutrition they put in their bodies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so getting to, here's a good one. To with all this, if you're going to elevate your health, and this is going to be our last topic, if you're going to elevate your health, what do you need to do? Align your lifestyle choices along with that, right? And we've been talking about this whole time, the food that we buy, what we do for exercise, the people we hang out with, right? What is one of the first things me and you tell people that we're trying to get them to eat healthy? We tell them your friends and family are going to be your downfall. They're going to be your triggers. And that they need to be either learn when to say no or find a new group of friends. So,
yeah.
You know, and that's that. But most of the time, when it comes to family, you have to be pretty stern on that issue. And that means, you know, choices you make, like you talked about, you know, not filling your time with too much social media and streaming channels, and not eating, you know, too much Halloween candy. And, you know, I mean, it's just kind of one of those things that you need to align your lifestyle choices with your new goal of being fit.
Well, make it a daily thing. Make it a all the time thing.
Yeah.
When you think about decision making for your health, that should be something you think about on every decision that you make. It should play a factor. And obviously, oh, am I going to go to the gym or not? Yes, that's a health-based decision. But so is so many other things. When am I going to go to bed? When am I going to wake up? What are we having for dinner?
Right.
What am I going to eat for breakfast? Do I want a snack right now or don't I want a snack right now? All of these things. You know, what kind of job am I going to do? Where am I going to work? All these things are health decisions as well. They have other factors in there too. But it's important to think about everything also from a health perspective for every decision we make.
Yeah. Beautifully said. I can't say much better myself.
That was a good episode.
Yeah, good.
Talked about some Halloween candy, but then we also got serious and talked about how to prioritize fitness in your life. So some very good things to draw from the episode. I know that I learned a lot today. I learned about the high protein benefits of Butterfingers. So I will make sure
to put that
into good use this Halloween season.
So, you know, we're not advocating to go load up on tons of Reese's and Butterfingers, but if you have one, it has, you know, 5 grams of protein.
You heard it here. Matt gave you permission. So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us, guys. This was episode 38. Great episode. We're going to be back next week, episode 39. We've got some great guests. It's one you're not going to want to miss.
All right, guys. Take care.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.